Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Well, Nate, Cody Rhodes' documentary on Peacock came out today. I started watching it, haven't made it all the way through. But I came away from tonight's Raw just more convinced that Cody Rhodes is the right babyface for this moment in time. His performance on the mic after the beatdown from Lesnar I thought was great. The beating he took from Lesnar was great. I thought Lesnar was a blast. Leading up to that, he asked for the what chance practically with his cadence, and he got it. I just thought that was a really nice, and I mean, it was amongst several things that stood out as really nice build for SummerSlam. But that was a highlight for me. I continue to just think Cody is outperforming probably the highest expectations for him as a babyface character right now. How are you feeling about Cody tonight and in general?
I just still can't believe Stardust is like as popular and as good as he is, right?
Yeah.
you know, and he's, I think he's absolutely exceeding expectations. He's the build to this match here at SummerSlam has been fantastic. From, I mean, all the way going back to, you know, the night after WrestleMania when he turned on Cody. It's been a long time coming, all the way the build here to SummerSlam. Cody, he's, like I said, he's been a great, great promo. The match here, or not match, but the segment here tonight, Brock Lesnar, like you said, his cadence was awesome. He was playing with the crowd. He had them in the palm of his hand. And then, you know, obviously he just kind of gave you everything that you want in a Brock Lesnar segment, you know, with the beatdown with Cody. You know, Cody gave you a little bit of hope here and there that he might, you know, get the upper hand on Brock. But yeah, basically Brock just kind of did exactly what you wanted to see, got some sympathy on Cody, and it's certainly making me look forward to that match at SummerSlam.
Yeah, I think when we saw what happened to Cody and kind of how things derailed, terms of getting the response that he was looking for, that AEW was looking for, a change of scenery, you know, seemed like a good idea, but I don't think it was guaranteed to have these kind of results. I mean, I really think that yeah. Cody has come through with guidance, you know, that, I mean, there's no question WWE's discipline and formatting of how they do promos keeps Cody from straying too far off the path, but he's got he just is carrying himself now like he doesn't have to think hard about how to react in the moment. I just think he's in a group. I think he's got a great relationship with the WWE fans at this point. He is playing a timeless babyface character. No meta stuff, no swerves, no insider stuff. I mean, he's this earnest babyface on a mission out to defend the family name, fight for what's right. You know, I mean, he's just like unabashedly so, and he delivers it like in such a believable fashion. I'm just so impressed with what he's done. And it's, there's some addition and there's some subtraction at this point compared to Cody and AEW. And obviously, like, I thought he was great as Stardust. It wasn't like taking full advantage of him. I got a kick out of it. I thought, like, there's sort of a dry sense of humor with him. And we saw that in the reality show he did with Brandy. And there's something about him in every role that he's played that's been fully invested. He's given grooming tips. Like, there's no sense of, oh, I'm doing this begrudgingly or any. It's like, it's just every step of the way, whether it was a good role or a bad role, he's been believable and, to me, entertaining in that role. But he did seem to lose his way in AEW a little bit. And, you know, that's you know, we'll talk about that for years. You know, what went wrong when everything started so right. But man, it was good tonight. And I mean, you know, obviously Roman and Jay is the main event of SummerSlam in most people's eyes. But Cody and Brock, I mean, that beatdown and then Cody fired a promo afterwards. It just, yeah, I mean, that was just really, really effective build. And the lines that they each spoke, I thought really stood out positively too in terms of building to the match. I'm trying to think of like some of the specifics that I especially liked. One thing I liked is the off-mic exchanges where it feels more real when they're not holding a microphone and talking to everybody. And when Cody leaned forward and whispered into Brock's ear something, and we don't know what it was, and Brock flinched, like, it disturbed him. That was great. Like, you don't know what Cody said. And also when Brock a minute earlier flinched, when Cody kind of made a move towards him when Brock has taken his hat off, like, Brock exudes this arrogant confidence. But obviously, he's a little on edge with Cody because Cody goes down and keeps getting back up, goes down, keeps getting back up. And then when he whispered something into Brock's ear, I mean, obviously, he probably told him a knock-knock joke in real life. But, you know, it's left to our imagination. What could he have said to Brock that would cause Brock to shudder like that? So the body language is great. The length of the segment and everything that they fit into it was great. And I also, like, after Lesnar beat up Cody and hit him twice with the stairs and then Brock's music played, I'm thinking to myself, how do they know Brock's done? You know, they're playing his music like he's done. And then
they went back to it.
And they went back to it. And basically, it was Lesnar's way of going, the sound guy doesn't tell me when I'm done. And he beat him up some more. So, yeah, I mean, there were more things I liked about that segment than I've listed, but that's a lot. There's a lot to like there. And I liked Lesnar opening up by saying, I'm an NCAA heavyweight champ, a UFC heavyweight champ, a world heavyweight champ, and this is fight week. And I get paid to beat up Cody, and Cody gets paid to get beat up by me. I mean, just great opening 2 minutes to that, too.
Absolutely. There's a lot of conviction there. Everything, like you said, everything about the segment, I think, was pretty much spot on. I really don't have anything. I don't have anything nitpicky about it. It just made me really, really hyped for their match at SummerSlam, this rubber match. And, like you said, I think it might be Cody's time, especially after his loss at WrestleMania. I mean, it was, you know, a lot of people thought he was going to wind up dethroning Roman Reigns. I was one of them. And it was a little heartbreaking when he didn't, but I mean, granted, considering what we've gotten out of Roman Reigns since then, I'm totally fine with it. But with that loss at WrestleMania, something meaningful at SummerSlam, second biggest show of the year, I think it's going to definitely do wonders for him.
Talk about what you expect or maybe hope to happen at SummerSlam between Cody and Lesnar. What is in the array of possibilities that you think they'll do? And is there something in particular you hope to see and maybe something you definitely don't want to see happen Saturday?
I'm hoping we see less blood than we probably will, considering the two people in the match. But other than that, like, I'm kind of hoping it starts out as almost like a normal typical Brock match where he's kind of manhandling Cody, but Cody winds up fighting from underneath, almost like a typical, you know, babyface underdog story, but it's maybe throw some sort of a swerve or something in there to kind of mix it up a little bit. Haven't really thought like a whole heck of a lot about how I'd fantasy book the match, if you will, but basically getting Brock out there doing Brock things and then making it or having Cody fight, you know, like I said, fight from underneath, making it believable and getting us just sucking us in and getting us super excited for that hopefully inevitable win.
I think fans are going to be so into this. I mean, fans are so into the WWE product right now. I'm watching Raw and I'm like, I remember when this was a slog, and it's not. Like, watching a 3-hour Raw right now with the crowd enthusiasm, from main event stuff to the fun stuff with Maxine and Valhalla, and then the Gunther Chad Gable thing, which is a classic thing. My first wrestling show I ever went to was if Kurt Hennig lasts 5 minutes with Adrian, maybe it was 10 minutes with Adrian Adonis, then Larry the Axe Hennig, Kurt's dad, got to get his hands on Adrian, and Adrian's like, I'll beat him. You won't get your hands on me. And of course, Kurt lasted the full 10 minutes and Larry the Axe got his hands on him and the fans went nuts. And Adrian Adonis took his pre-flower shop era, bumps. Who was a great bump taker when he was more fit and younger. And the crowd just ate it up. And the crowd ate this up too, and we'll get to that as we go. But yeah, just right now it's a company that feels like it's in a groove. And do you agree with me that Raw at 3 hours? I mean, I'd still rather have it at two. But they're doing a much better job filling the three than really any time I can remember right now.
No, I for me, 2 hours is a perfect length for a wrestling show, but I completely agree with you. And one thing that I noticed tonight, that I mean, and they've been doing this for a while, but it did actually, like, something I was thinking about earlier tonight, everything on the show meant something. I can't really think of anything on the show that was just like filler or Vince just throwing something out because he wanted to laugh at it. Everything meant something. And I think that's a large reason why, you know, this show doesn't feel like a slog. You're not just sitting there for the audience of one per se anymore. They've actually started to weave coherent stories in throughout the entirety of the 3 hours. And they're actually giving us reasons to care about everybody. So I agree 100%. They're doing a great job right now.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously it helps when you're doing the go home show before SummerSlam to have every segment mean something. But it did, you know, I mean, and they did so in a diverse way. You know, I mean, there was just diversity to how they had things. I mean, the Ronda Rousey, Shayna Baszler stuff we'll get into too.
Oh, God.
That was great. Yeah.
That was amazing.
Yeah. Okay. So let's pause and formally introduce ourselves and the show, and then we'll get on with more conversation about Raw. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, July 31st, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, the host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of Pro Wrestling Torch, the newsletter, the website, and a bunch of podcasts. And also, we're putting up content on the YouTube channel. Go to youtube.com/PWTorch. Today, we put up a snippet of last week's VIP exclusive Fix Mailbag. The Fix is a weekly show Todd Martin and I do. And the Mailbag segment is always VIP exclusive. And this week included a lot of questions, but one of them was on star ratings. And Todd had a lot to say about star ratings. And in particular, Dave Meltzer breaking the 5-star top limit in going to 6 and 7. And it's getting some traction and some buzz on YouTube. And you should check that out if you haven't yet. It's a good glimpse into what Todd and I do for, you know, about an hour and a half every week, give or take, of the Mailbag, not to mention an hour and a half, give or take, of our current events podcast running through the top happenings of the week in wrestling. So again, subscribe to that or check out that video. We've got some other ones up there too with me on camera doing some introductions and setting the scene and some follow-up afterwards too. Again, that's youtube.com/PWTorch. But we're here to talk Raw and SummerSlam hype. And my guest is Nate Lindberg. It's been too long since Nate and I have done a show together. It's great to have him here on the Raw Post Show. He is most well known, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, for your contributions to the PWT Talks NXT podcast. Nate, what else are you known for? Anything else more than that?
I would say that's probably what I'm known the most for around these parts, but I also write the NXT hits and misses, pwtorch.com. Just last Sunday, not this past Sunday, but 2 Sundays ago, or not yesterday, I guess, I filled in for Greg Parks, Wrestling Night in America, along with Kevin Catani. We had some great conversation about NXT and the build to SummerSlam. And then also last night after the Great American Bash, I recorded a VIP roundtable with Bruce Hazelwood and Kelly Wells, talking all about Great American Bash and all of the goings on and Rey Mysterio and Judgment Day, or not Rey Mysterio, Dominic Mysterio, right. Judgment Day down in NXT. So yeah, that's I've been doing quite a bit over the last couple of weeks.
Absolutely. And what I meant when I said that is or maybe you're a Las Vegas magician and I just don't know about it, and you're more well known for that. When I said, what are you most well known for? But yes, you contribute in many ways, and more so lately, in many ways. And it's great to have you here on the Raw Post Show, but everybody should check out his work, especially on the PWT Talks NXT show and his Hits and Misses column at pwtorch.com to subscribe to the Daily Casts, which is a different show every day of the week with a different theme. Go to your podcast app of your choice and enter PWTorch, and you'll see the Daily Cast logo pop up. You can subscribe there. Also, you'll see our kind of charcoal gray PW Torch VIP logo pop up. That's our free sample page or feed, and you can get free samples of VIP podcasts, including, by the way, on occasion, the Fix Mailbag. And when you do that, you also can upgrade using your Apple account to the full array of VIP podcasts. That's a pretty frictionless, easy way to check out our full VIP lineup of podcasts. We have VIP shows just about every day of the week, sometimes multiple shows. And you can use your Apple account and just, I think you just have to touch the fingerprint sensor and boom, suddenly all these other shows will unlock if you search PW Torch within Apple Podcasts. But you can also subscribe to the free samples on any podcast app and check out some of the VIP exclusive material. And then you can go VIP manually at pwtorch.com/goVIP. And when you do, you'll have many options on how to pay and subscribe, including PayPal, credit card, debit card, and we even have a Patreon option. But it's time to get back to talking about Raw, and we invite you to join us. The number to call if you're live streaming the show but you want to contribute is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1. That flags you on our switchboard so that we know you want to join the conversation. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right. So, Nate, we mentioned right before we introduced ourselves there that Ronda Rousey, Shayna Baszler, two-part video package. It's such a different way to hype the match than anything else they did on the show. It's been done before, you know, in various ways, you know, pre-tape vignettes, but I thought it was just a great way to feature Ronda and Shayna. You know, they're neither are great live on the microphone. You know, Ronda starts speed talking and you just like lose control. It's like, you know, a truck rolling down the hill out of control, yep, off a cliff. It's just like, and you just like, you get distracted by what she's saying because you're like worried she's just going to like, you know, like a pinball machine tilting or something. This was amazing. And they were emotional. They talked about their real life history, obviously embellished things as needed, but probably amplified some things that were real. What stood out to you about this? What did you like? Was there anything you didn't like? And how do you think they're steering fans in terms of how things will go and who they ought to root for?
At least coming out of this, I'm kind of like almost rooting for Shayna Baszler. Like you're hearing all of this, everything about Ronda Rousey and how she was, you know, kind of selfish, at least from Shayna Baszler's perspective, right? How she was very selfish and she, you know, may have given her a place to stay, but you know, she was beaten up every day as a sparring partner for it and things like that. So just kind of the story that they told there, at least for me, I got sympathy for Shayna here. I'm, you know, whether or not that's the way that, you know, everybody else is going to necessarily take it, I don't know. That's the way I took it. But I thought this was absolutely fantastic. Like you said, neither one of them is really known for their skills on the mic. Shayna has her moments where she's, you know, pretty decent. She's got some decent conviction or whatever, but where this was a pre-taped segment and the overall production value was top notch. Just, I mean, as WWE is always ought to do. But the acting and the way that they delivered their lines and the fact that they did get emotional and they started crying and, you know, whether or not that's, I mean, they figured out how to make themselves cry or they actually dug down and, you know, into those real life situations that they started to bring up to bring up those emotions to make themselves get emotional. Whatever they did to make this video package or these video packages, come out the way that they actually did and the way that they aired. I thumbs up, high five, everything about them, I think, not only amplified the feud, but got me more invested in both of them. I mean, Shayna and Ronda, I feel like I've been interested because I love Shayna Baszler and Ronda Rousey. I'm always kind of like, I'm always interested in what she's doing. Because she's Ronda Rousey. So, you know, I'm still interested in the feud, but it still kind of felt maybe a little, I don't want to say cold, but almost a little bit. This really got me more excited about the feud. Like I said, very well produced. A lot of just the acting, all the lines delivered, like I said, with conviction. And overall, it was just extremely, extremely well done.
Yeah, I mean, you're right about their emotions and the tears. It felt real. It didn't feel like, oh, let's, you know, pour Tabasco sauce in our eyes right before a take. Like, everything sort of felt like this was pulling. It's like in the Cody documentary, his acting coach talked about how their method of acting is to pull from real emotions in life and then transfer that to the stage for their characters' performances and how, you know, you dig deep into places you don't normally go in order to get real emotions on stage. And, you know, I think that's what happened there. I'm curious to ask around about who produced that. You know, I know Paul Heyman's tight with Ronda Rousey. Did he have something to do with it? Because, I mean, it felt like something that I wouldn't be surprised if he framed, because so much of what Paul does on camera with people, whether it's Big E or Caleb Braxton or back in the day Rob Van Dam or way back in the day Sting, he just brings out the best in people. And I could imagine him producing this, you know, and just getting them like psyched up and revved up and, you know, go here, tell me something that haunts you to this day. Now think about that. And now don't talk about that. Talk about this storyline, you know, but use those emotions. Like, so I'm curious about the making of that video. The comments of Shayna saying Rhonda's friendship, you know, depends on her using you. She goes, well, you can live here free, but you have to be a sparring partner who gets beat up. And then I got tired of standing in front of her to protect her from the people who are coming after her. But I didn't want to stand in front of her for her to stand on my shoulders any longer. And it did make me sympathetic to Shayna Baszler. And it's rare in wrestling where somebody turns on their own partner out of nowhere in a match and they end up being the babyface. I don't know if that was a plan all along, but certainly the crowd reaction to Rhonda kind of dictated it. You know, there was a headwind to try to get people to cheer Rhonda, and they just are kind of, you know, leaning into it, whether it's a pick'em or it's deliberate, what they're trying to get people to do. I'm curious what the crowd reaction is on Saturday. And they did declare what it's not a wrestling match, it's a fight. They say it's fighting under MMA rules. I'm curious to see how they tell that story. Rhonda is you know, Ron and Shane are like great friends in real life. It doesn't mean there's not tension. Friends have tension, and they might have, again, embellished and on that and exaggerated it for drama. But, you know, they really, I had reported this, like they wanted this feud, and breaking up or feuding with each other had been delayed. And, but they ended up teaming them and then having them break up. And the breakup happened pretty quick because they wanted to sneak in the feud before Rhonda takes a hiatus, and I assume it's coming up right after SummerSlam, but they haven't revealed the actual date, her final date. So there's possible there's a rematch. And I respect that they're not telling people, maybe it's gotten out by now, but I don't think so, when the final date is for Rhonda, because it leaves open the possibility that SummerSlam isn't the end of it. It's the beginning of something that lasts another month or two. Just Nate, your thoughts on that.
Yeah. I did mean to bring up the stipulation. I'm glad you brought it up because I forgot to talk about it. I'm really curious to see how they wind up presenting the match. If, you know, under MMA rules, I think everybody at this point, you know, that's interested in wrestling has probably seen MMA or UFC in some capacity, you know, in their lives at this point. It can be very brutal, and there's blood and gore and violence, and I want to see how they're going to replicate that in a WWE environment. And because, I mean, a lot of times when they try to do, like, you know, I think back to like the Lion's Den match with, was Owen and Shamrock, and which was still, you know, was still a good match. But a lot of times when they try to emulate MMA, it doesn't, the Brawl for All, for example, doesn't always work out. I think with, obviously the Brawl for All is a completely different example. You're taking, you know, fighters that aren't really trained in MMA or boxing or whatever and asking them to do that. Whereas in this case, you've got two actual trained MMA fighters. But I'm really curious and I'm really excited to see how they put this match together and how they wind up telling the story of, you know, whoever winds up winning. You know, I'm kind of leaning towards Shayna at this point. That stipulation right there, I don't know, some people might kind of like poo-poo it a little bit, but I think that for me, it added a little bit to the feud, kind of harkens back to their roots outside of the company. I'm just hoping that within the confines of what you can do in WWE in a PG environment, that they're going to be able to pull off a believable match that is like contested under MMA rules, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. I have high hopes. I think with the type of work that went into these videos tonight, I think they're going to put maybe an equal amount of work into telling a really great story in the ring on Saturday. So good stuff there. What was the next best match hype on this show? What did you like also? In addition, we talked about Cody Lesnar, we talked about Rhonda and Shayna.
So I think for me, oh man, let's see. Probably the best hype was probably Lesnar Rhodes for me. Seth and why am I blanking? Seth and Balor.
Yep.
Also some good hype for me here. I'm really invested in the Judgment Day story, like Judgment Day period right now, with all of their stories across all three brands, you know, Raw, SmackDown, and NXT, which, you know, I closely follow NXT. So you know, Judgment Day and Seth Rollins. That's that I'm really looking forward to as well.
Yeah, I liked Logan Paul and Ricochet. We have an email on it coming up, and that'll add to it. So we'll kind of table it for now. But I'm throwing that out there as something I liked. But there's an emailer who there's something they didn't like about it, which normally I don't like about it, but I thought it worked this time. And I'll explain why. But I will just say Ricochet's doing the best mic work of his career. And Logan Paul is in his natural environment as a wrestling heel. I mean, he's being real effective. So we'll get a little more detail into that as the show progresses here. Okay, so let's get to the listener interaction portion of the show. Again, you can email us or call us. There's not a long wait on the phone lines tonight, so because I don't think there's a lot to gripe about, but feel free to call in just to rave if there's things you like, or if you think we're being too kind to the show, let us know that too. If you already called up and haven't pushed one, push one. If you haven't called and want to be on the show, call 347-215-8558 and push one on your keypad. Otherwise, email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, so we'll go to Sergio in Connecticut. You are up as our caller right now. Sergio, welcome to the show. What's on your mind about Raw?
What's going on, guys? I was in and out on Raw. Like, I was watching in chunks, and then I had to, like, otherwise occupied a few times. But I was watching the opening of the show. I hate to steal the email asunder, but I did kind of want to bring up the Logan Paul Ricochet because really into that. I'm really into that feud. I didn't know much about Logan Paul before WWE. Like, I knew a little bit, but, like, man, I feel like he's, like, such a natural. He is, like, super natural in there. Like, he feels confident. He's cast right as a heel. That weird babyface thing he was doing in the beginning of his run that just wasn't working. Like, I'm glad he's just, like, leaning into, like, what seems to be his natural tendencies. And I thought he had great heat. Like, it wasn't quite dominant heat, but, like, every time he tried to talk, the crowd started booing. And what he's doing for Ricochet is pretty big, too. Like, Ricochet has had flashes his WWE career. Like, I've been a fan of Ricochet for a long time, since pre-Lucha Underground, but especially during Lucha Underground. But, man, Ricochet seems more confident. I don't know. I'm assuming it's Logan Paul getting some kind of something out of him, which is, I think, is awesome. Like, it was cool to hear Ricochet's music and actually hear a pop for him. And then, Ricochet, like, I was like, whoa, like, this feud's really getting over, you know? And I just wanted to get your thoughts on that. Like, I said, I hate to steal email or thunder, but I was really into it.
No problem.
I'm really into both these guys right now and this feud.
Nate, I'll let you talk, because I kind of complimented aspects of this already. What did you think? What do you have to say about what Sergio brought up?
Yeah, so first off, Logan Paul, I too did not know too much about Logan Paul prior to him signing WWE. I knew a little bit. I heard about, you know, things in the news, some good, some bad. I started looking into him a little bit more and kind of consuming some of his content, like his podcasts and things like that after he joined. And I mean, I wouldn't say I'm like a super fan of Logan Paul, but for what he can do in the ring with the little training that he's had, I respect the hell out of him for it. I've had the opportunity to get in the ring for a weekend. I did a summer camp, and it's not easy. I mean, I'm not super athletic myself, but, like, for what he can do is just absolutely, you know, incredible. Pairing him with somebody like Ricochet, you know, that has a very similar skill set and is much more polished in what he can do with that skill set. Logan Paul is going to absorb everything he possibly can. Anytime I hear Logan talk about learning the wrestling business, it just sounds like he wants to be a sponge. He wants to absorb everything he can from every single person he's talked to. I remember hearing him talk about how he's kind of turned, you know, Shawn Michaels into a little bit of a mentor and things like that. So it's like he's always trying to absorb things. He's going to do that from Ricochet. They're going to go out there and put on a fantastic match. If, you know, what we saw at the Royal Rumble and that just that collision midair, is something to go by. I think we're going to go out, they're going to go out there, you know, in SummerSlam and put on something absolutely spectacular. You know, to the caller's point, you know, Ricochet, I feel like he is a little bit more confident and he's a little bit more excited about, you know, what he's doing right now, because he probably is excited about what he's doing right now. He's working with a celebrity that has a name and has a name recognition, brand recognition, well outside of WWE. So this is, I mean, this particular match is probably going to wind up being talked about, you know, in mainstream media. It's going to be talked about through the millions of fans that Logan Paul has. So Ricochet's in the spotlight, he's in the limelight, and he's in a position where he is, you know, presumably anyway, there to teach Logan Paul more about the business, more about how to, you know, perform in that type of a style, and so on and so forth. But yeah, I'm actually very excited about this. I think it's a great position for Ricochet. It's a great position for Logan Paul. It's not necessarily, might not be as high profile as some of his other matches are or have been so far. But I think it's going to be potentially one of his best matches, if not his best match to date.
Yeah. The crowd chanting Ricochet, like, I mean, that's got to feel good for Ricochet. I mean, he's just been, you know, come out, come to the music, the ping pong ball noise, whatever, Super Bowl noises, boop, boop, boop. He does high spots, he loses. This is different. This is stepping up and being, you know, a full-fledged WWE superstar with a push. And, you know, it is sort of a good matchup personality-wise, because Logan it makes it so easy to – if you're – I think he inspires investment in countering his snide. Well, Trisha Snide. What is Logan? Just arrogant, you know. Just a punk arrogance, I guess would be the way to describe Logan. And you know, he's a great wrestling heel. I mean, he really is a great wrestling heel character. And Ricochet has stepped up. I loved that Logan Paul went to Samantha Irvin at ringside and said, "When I beat you,
yeah,
your fiance is going to have to announce me as a winner while you're flat on your back in the ring." I mean, that's great. And then Ricochet reacted as you should, if someone takes a dig at your fiance like that, arrogantly and in the way that he did, and he went after him. So this, I don't know if Ricochet, this is the peak of his WWE career and he settles back down again, or if this is the sign of WWE gaining confidence in him, especially on the microphone. There's this whole layer that just is added to his character. And he seems more confident, more sure-footed, more cool. There's always been a certain cool vibe to him, but there's always been something that just wasn't quite there. And I don't know. I'm impressed. So it's good stuff. Sergio, jump back in with any if you want to follow up on that or something else if you choose.
I was going to bring that up too. I loved adding the thing with his real-life fiance. Like, I was like, ooh, that's such a D-bag move, and like he just seemed just the smile he had on his face as he was saying it, and like you said, Ricochet's reaction to it. And man, I'm really excited because, like I said, I've been a fan of Ricochet for a long time, and I'm just wondering and I'm hoping really that this isn't just, like you said, the highlight of his career. I'm really hoping it springboards him into something, because yeah, they're chanting Ricochet right now and they got popped, but I'm just hoping it's not. It's because he's flying close to the sun that is Logan Paul's heat right now, because, like, mm-hmm. I've been burned a few times, like over in AEW, for example. I was a huge Wardlow guy, and he was flying next to MJF's heat, and he was getting crowd reactions. And once they separated him from that, like, his crowd reactions were gone, and his character was nothing. There was nothing there for him. And it kind of feels that way. I mean, it could be I'll use this to transition a little bit. But, like, man, like, I was kind of sad when I heard Sami Zayn come out today and, like, his crowd reaction was just almost nothing. Like, to go from feuding with the Bloodline and getting the biggest reactions to the night to him just kind of floundering. And, again, that could all be Kevin Owens being injured and they had to pivot and stuff like that. But I just really hope that they could build something off Ricochet. And I don't know if that's another feud with Gunther for the IC title, because I believe they did feud for the IC title already. If I'm not mistaken, I don't think Ricochet will ever reach world title level, but is there anything you guys can see that he could bounce off of after this feud to keep his momentum going, or do you think he's just going to end up stalling and this is going to be the highlight of, like, his year in WWE?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not confident he's going to be able to follow up on this because maybe Logan Paul is just sort of this magic opponent for him. But there's options. You know, I mean, Ricochet could feud with Damian Priest or Finn Balor or Dominic. And I think that would work. Nate, anybody, any heels come to mind as a good follow-up after the Logan Paul feud?
For Ricochet?
Yeah.
Nothing off the top of my head. Nothing off the top of my head. I'm sure if I gave it a little bit of thought, but...
Yeah, I mean, there's Miz, Bronson Reed.
Bronson Reed. That could actually be, that could be fun. Because Bronson Reed he's a big man, because he's an athletic big man. I feel like the two of them could, actually have some really cool matches. I just think the story would be, they need to tell a really compelling story in order to get people behind either one of the two of them.
I'm not sure when Braun Strowman's is able to return, but you know they had a good chemistry as a team, so maybe they reunite the team. But Ricochet has some momentum coming out of that. And you know, they have a good taking view, too. I guess that's an option. I mean, with the roster split, there's not a ton of options. And I think Ricochet is not someone they were planning to plan for this fall. You know, he's just the utility guy. They'll plug him in wherever there's something. But maybe coming out of this, they want to do more. Sergio, anything else you want to bring up?
Well, this is kind of, like I said, I was in and out of Raw. But I did watch the Cody Rhodes documentary today. And I just wanted to ask, did either of you guys get a chance to watch it or –
Yeah, I've watched maybe a half hour of the 2 hours so far today. I had a busy day, but I definitely started on it as soon as it was available. I was like, okay, I got to turn this on. But I just didn't have the time to finish, but I certainly plan to. What'd you think, having seen the whole thing?
I thought it was really good. I've been a fan of Cody Rhodes for a long time, like 10 years ago. Like, it's funny. Like, if you look on YouTube, you can still see this. During, like, a NXT wedding, you can see me dancing back and forth with a dashing Cody Rhodes sign, because that's how big Cody Rhodes is. And I've just been a fan of him ever since, like, always loved him, like, when they feuded with the Shield, and it was just so cool, like, seeing him, seeing the progression of his career, and they literally leave almost no stone left unturned. I was even surprised, like, they didn't shy away from AEW, they didn't shy away from the Young Bucks, they talked a lot about them, All In, the build up to that. Like, they even show the AEW logo. It wasn't like blurred out or anything like that.
Huh.
And it was a little surprising for me. It made me think, like, do you think this could be, I'm not a big Young Bucks fan. I'm just not, but like, do you think something like that could be like planting the seeds? Like, hey, maybe the Young Bucks are kind of easing in their way to like WWE. Do you think that's just like, hey, you know, we got Cody, he's a big star, we want to tell his story. AEW and All In was a big part of his story, so we can't just leave this out of here. Like, what do you guys think on that?
Yeah. I wouldn't read into it. Doesn't rule anything out, but I don't think it necessarily rules anything in either. That you know, the Bucks are in it. I mean, it's cool that they got permission to use the footage, and you know, I just don't know if the Bucks, with at their age and wear and tear and family life, and you know, being based in the West Coast, I just don't know if they're all that excited to go like on a WWE schedule. You know, and I think I don't want to presume to know, but I mean, they're financially set if they want to be, you know, based on their initial contracts with AEW. So, you know, we'll see, but you know, I mean, obviously Cody being treated well in WWE is because Cody deserved to be treated well by WWE, because there's potential to make money with him, but it has the side effect of sending a message to anyone in AEW that we're not going to punish you. We're not going to be petty. If you're good, you're going to get an opportunity here to make a lot of money. And, you know, so if they like you and you like, and you're open to it, I think you can have a good experience there. And Cody is an example of that. But yeah, I wouldn't necessarily read into the Bucks being part of it as trying to court them. It just seems like that's a logical part of the Cody story.
I
Sergio, appreciate
that.
The
last thing I do want to sneak in is when Cody was training to return from his pec injury, they did feature Carmelo Hayes there in that part of the documentary. Like, he was like his training partner, getting him back into shape and all this stuff like that. And I know, for, you know, I was just reading into the Young Bucks being in there, and this is basically the same thing. But do you think maybe there's a potential for down the line of Carmelo and Cody Rhodes, like, just working on their chemistry? I mean, I know The Rock worked with Brian Myers, for example, when he was training to get back to the ring for WrestleMania years ago, so obviously that didn't lead to anywhere, but I think we all could agree that Carmelo Hayes has a slight more upside than Brian Myers had, especially back in the day. And I guess that's all I can say. That's all I got. Like I said, I didn't watch too much of Raw, but I just wanted to sneak in a little Cody documentary talk, and thanks for taking the call, guys.
Yeah, Sergio, I'm glad you did. Well, Nate, you're the person to ask. Carmelo Hayes.
Carmelo Hayes is phenomenal. I can't say enough about him. He trained actually in my area New England Pro Wrestling Academy, just a few miles from where I live. I've actually watched him a couple times in the indies. I didn't even realize I'd seen him on the indies until after he debuted as Carmelo Hayes, which is funny. But I kind of remember that guy. I've seen him on the indies, and I've seen him, progress through WWE. And NXT rather. And when he first debuted in NXT, it was part of the breakout tournament. I think it was a year and a half, almost maybe 2 years. Wow. Almost 2 years ago at this point. And I remember thinking, I think Tom was still on the show, and it was Tom Kelly and I remember talking to the three of us talking on the show. And it was like Carmelo Hayes stood out to the three of us in terms of his wrestling ability, but his mic ability just seemed like a generic creator wrestler at the time. He didn't have the whole shtick he has right now with Trick Williams. But once NXT 2.0 became a thing, that's when Carmelo Hayes really, really started to come into his own. He debuted the current incarnation of his character alongside Trick Williams. The two of them together are absolute gold. And I think coming up to the main, it's just a matter of time before they hit the main roster at this point. We were talking quite a bit on PWT Talks NXT about the potential for Carmelo Hayes to come up to the main roster soon. Would he potentially lose his title at Great American Bash to Ilya Dragunov, or would he, and if he did, would that be kind of the catalyst for him to come up to the main roster? It didn't really quite seem like it was, Carmelo's time to lose. So we didn't really put a whole lot of stock in that, but certainly something we talked about. But we've been talking about this for months and months and months at this point. Carmelo, especially, but Carmelo and Trick, they're one of, if not the most polished act in NXT. You could pluck them out of NXT, put them on the main roster like they tried doing, maybe a month ago, 3 weeks ago, however long it was, on Monday Night Raw, in that segment with Seth Rollins on Raw, and then the match that the two of them had on NXT. It was the highest rated NXT, I believe, of the year, if I'm not mistaken, or at least in quite some time. I don't even remember what the original question was anymore. I just kept gushing about Carmelo Hayes. But
you're making anything of his in involvement in the Cody documentary, I guess, is kind of the gist.
Was there?
Just with him with training with Cody. That's what Sergio was talking about.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I just kind of kept going on a Carmelo rant here.
No, it's great.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I actually did not realize that that he helped Cody out. I'm going to watch the Cody documentary probably on Wednesday. So tomorrow night's going to be on NXT by the time I get a chance to sit down, but I'm probably going to watch it on Wednesday. But yeah, I actually didn't realize that. That's actually good to know. I didn't realize that.
All right. So we want to invite more callers. Give us a call, 347-215-8558. And when you call push 1, you can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Up next, we're headed to Houston. Go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from. Area code 713.
I'm calling from Houston. I was actually at the show today.
Yeah, awesome. What's your name?
Jarvis.
Jarvis, cool. Thank you for calling. I'm glad we got an on-site correspondent. How was the show? What was the experience like?
It was great. It was great. It was nice to see the Toyota Center full to the rafters. I can remember going a couple years ago, right before the pandemic, and you had sections tarped off and things like that. But it was a packed house. It was really nice. The crowd was full of energy. Definitely ready for SummerSlam. Definitely ready for everything that that the guys brought tonight. It was a great show.
When you say where the building was full, like how full was it? Was it really the last row around the whole upper deck was full, or were there some scattered seats maybe behind the hard cam in the upper deck?
No, it was completely full. Like I said, I remember, you know, 3-4 years ago, it was tarped off. Even some of the lower levels being tarped off at a Raw show I went to several years ago. But no, it was full. They were actually turning away people at the box office.
That's amazing. I mean, it's when wrestling gets that hot, and you can tell by the crowd reactions, people are into this product right now. And you know, I'm
absolutely
watching it, and I'm sick going, this is WWE clicking right now. I know earlier today, WrestlePix had the number at almost 13,000 tickets distributed, and almost a sellout. Like they only had like 7 seats left as of this afternoon. And they the last time they were there for Raw on August 1st last year, they drew 10,445. It's a good city for them. They didn't burn it out, but yeah, I mean, when you're turning away fans, that's a good feeling if you're a wrestling company and the wrestlers on the show.
Absolutely.
So Jarvis, you got to experience Dominic. Not necessarily the top item of this show. He's been the top story on some recent shows. What was it like to be in a building with that kind of heel heat? You know, we talk about Logan being a good punk heel. Dominic is a good punk heel, too, in a different way. Talk about the crowd reaction for him.
Oh, they were ready the minute Judgment Day walked out. You could just feel they were ready for Dom. I will say, Logan Paul's heat was on par with Dom Pete. It's just they actually let Logan talk, but the actual boos, and maybe it was because he came out first. I mean, he got some monster heat. But no, Dom is they've got something special with Dom, with the heat that he's drawing and the way that it almost feels like the crowd, some of the people in the crowd came with intention just to boo him. Like that was, you know, you're like, I'm here to see Cody. I'm here to see Brock Lesnar. I'm here to boo Dominic Mysterio. And then, you know, him, the way he has learned to kind of blend in with it and make it part of his gimmick has been really working for him. And then them finding a way to put gold on him to make him this bratty champion along the way. Like it's brilliant.
Bratty.
And it's great. It's really great television. And you know, being in the building, you know, sometimes, you know, when Dom first started getting the heat, you know, I'll be honest. I know that the WWE was doing the tricks where they were piping in crowd noise and things like that. I wasn't sure, but I was in the mix. It was deafening. It's real heat. Everybody in the building is on their feet. And you know it was crazy when Ciampa came out, the crowd went nuts. I mean, there was nothing. Nobody booed. Nobody cheered. It was just like he walked out, and everybody's just kept doing what they're doing, scrolling on their phones. But when Dom is out, everybody's on their feet, booing as loud as they possibly can.
Now it's funny we talk about Dom and Logan Paul as great heel heat magnets. And Brock Lesnar was out there as a major heel. Did Brock Lesnar finish third, or was it a different kind of heel heat, but intense
and it's definitely different.
Also.
It's definitely different. But I was on the floor. I was about 6 rows back, and actually Logan Paul walked through the crowd right by where I was sitting, and he was a baby face when he walked in through the crowd. He was slapping hands and smiling and everything. But now Brock Lesnar, everybody was anticipating the Brock and Cody segment. So, you know, Brock comes out first. You know, the crowd's excited to see it. It's Brock Lesnar, you know. So it was we're booing him because he's the antagonist in this situation more than Dom's heat's not go away heat, but just that nasty, bratty. No, it was a different
it's
kind
fun.
Of heat.
I mean, it's a fun kind of heat because I think people, I mean, there's kids who just like think he's the worst ever, but I think adults see him as representing the worst ever in their lives.
Right.
And they really love leaning into it. And then he's such a good foil for it. But yeah, I agree with you. It's not go away heat because I think people would be less apt to buy a ticket for a show Dominic's not on. And go away heat is I'm here despite you. And that's just not the case with Dominic.
Yeah, and with Brock, it was even there was even some scattered chance of like one more time after he F5'd Cody. So again, it's that dichotomy to where it's like one way, you know, everybody's kind of like wanting to boo him, but then it's like they're still excited to see, you know, this legendary wrestler. We don't know how much longer we're going to see him, so it's still appreciating the greatness that we're seeing.
Nate, jump on in with a question for our onsite correspondent, Travis.
Yeah, so first off, very disappointed to hear that there was nobody standing for my man Tommaso Ciampa because he is probably my favorite wrestler. But that's okay. That's okay. So kind of sticking on the topic of reactions, when we were talking with Sergio, he mentioned that the reaction for Sami Zayn was not nearly as pronounced as it once was. And that's the way it at least came across on TV. Is that the way it came across in the building as well? Just not nearly as excited to see Sami as people once were, like during the Bloodline angle?
Yeah, he's cooled off so much, post-Bloodline. He was so integral, such an integral part of everything that we're even seeing now in the Bloodline, too. I think, you know, after, you know, just kind of fading into a tag team after being in the main event at Elimination Chamber with Roman and really tearing the house down, to just kind of fading into this is kind of like a step down and he's kind of back to where he was. Kevin being out, now is a good time to, you know, maybe have a tag team tournament and get Sami back hot as a singles act. I think he can get hot again, but he's got to be more of a singles act. I was hoping something maybe transpired with him and Kevin to where like Kevin, you know, started getting jealous of the cheers and the crowd reaction that Sami was getting or something and maybe turned and that kind of, you know, maybe spun into another feud to kind of keep Sami hot, but they just kept him as a tag team and I think it cooled both of them off. When you're talking about Kevin Owens, his main event at two WrestleManias in a row, and now he's just a tag team champion with Sami Zayn and it's just, I think there's more that they could be doing. And I know with Roman's title reign, you know, going on forever that, hey, it's only so much you could do at the top of the card. And, you know, we're just now kind of incorporating another title, but, you know, you're talking about two guys that can, you know, really have some drawing power, especially when you struck gold with Sami Zayn last year. And so to kind of, you know, see him just get, I mean, the crowd cared about Sami, you know, when he came out, but I mean, honestly, Seth was the more powerful reaction to that main event.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Nate, if you have another one.
No.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so what I want to ask is from a babyface reaction standpoint, and in terms of the entrance theme and the fans enjoying the entrance theme, you've got Seth, you have Cody. I agree. Like, I was feeling kind of bad for Sami because it's like Sami's song used to be the thing that everyone rocked out for, and then Seth comes out and it you know, one-ups him. But talk about that. Like, the most enjoyable one of the most enjoyable aspects of going to WWE show for a lot of fans is the entrance themes and participating in them. Talk about experiencing that, Seth in particular, but man, people love that part of Cody's song where there's, and even Sami, you know, got to hear his original music. Anything else jump out among those or besides those and talk about where you rank them?
No, I think the crowd was really on fire for the Cody one, but Cody had a serious entrance today. He, you know, he wasn't in a suit. He was ready for war.
Yeah.
He didn't do any of his normal, you know, theatrics during the entrance. But of course, the crowd did it all the times that we heard it. So I think that was the most anticipated. But Seth Rollins actually was able, you know, he was in the participatory state where he was reacting with the crowd and everything. Actually, Becky Lynch got a pretty nice reaction during hers as well. Becky Lynch does an amazing job connecting with the fans. During the commercial break, you know, she's kind of interacting with fans while she's in the ring waiting awkwardly for the commercial break to end. So she did a great job doing that. So she just has a special connection with the fans. So, yeah, I would rank it You know, I think I was anticipating that Cody was going to have the entrance of the night, but again, he meant business. So I got to go with Seth, followed by Cody. Judgment Day, everybody was feeling Judgment Day's entrance as well. Of course, Rhea's the one that everybody's kind of like cheering. And then everybody's, you know, there to boo Dom out of the building. But when they come out, I mean, everybody's on their feet and you know, they have everybody's attention. So they were pretty good. I thought, is it the Alpha Academy or whatever they are now, Otis,
yeah.
and Gable, everybody was feeling that as well. So that was really cool to see. But yeah, you know, I mean, even before the Raw, like everything was good. Like everybody was into everything except, sorry, Nate, but they weren't in the Ciampa. That was the only time the crowd was dead.
Yeah, it's okay.
I was going to ask about that because I was looking at the show and what happened, and I'm like, yeah, Ciampa seems like the one who would be sort of left out when we talk about, you know, baby faces getting really big reactions. Jarvis, talk about Maxine, and because, like, first of all, the whole Gable or the whole Alpha Academy are wearing pink. We got Tiffany Stratton leaning into the whole Barbie thing too. WWE knows,
right.
You know, the trend. I think we're gonna change PLUtorch.com's colors to pink. See if we can gain some traction and seem like we're riding a wave. The reaction to Maxine seems exactly what they're looking for. And we got an email on this, and I'm sort of getting ahead of things a little bit when I say this, but she doesn't need to be good. She just needs to look like she's shocked that she's passable. You know, like her bar is so low. Her gimmick is I'm new and I don't know if I can do anything. So when she does something, even when it's a clumsy arm drag, she looks like, oh my God, I did it. And it seems like the crowd is the goodwill that WWE has with the crowd right now is so strong. And it's transferring to this also. Talk about the buzz in the building for her and in particular.
Yeah, everybody in the crowd was like, you know, it's like they had never seen, you know, either woman wrestle. So they were, you know, it was exciting and kind of like, who's going to win this match? And, you know, Valhalla seemed, you know, more like the more menacing one. And so, you know, it was like, okay, are you going to keep the heat on the Viking Raiders side? Or are you going to get this, to your point, Wade, this kind of like, oh my gosh, I did it kind of, you know, win from her. And that's what they got. And, you know, the crowd ate it up. You know, that's the one thing I can say. WWE has really made everything feel important. To even this, you know, a couple years ago, this whole thing would be a joke. It would be an afterthought. It'd be a restroom segment. But it was great. I mean, I can remember the Viking Rules match a couple weeks ago. That was awesome. Like, but two, 3 years ago, that thing would have been absolute drizzling shit if it would. Sorry, I'm sorry to cuss on your pod, Wade. But they've done such a good job of building everybody up and making them feel like they should be on our television to where everything felt good. And yeah, I mean, I was into her. Like, I'm like, this is awesome. And, you know, it really shouldn't be, but it was. And then for it to end up being the match with Gunther and Gable, that ended up being great. Like, just everything is important.
The Gable-Gunther match also seemed to work, and it had two segments to it. You know, Gunther sort of methodically, overconfidently, taking his time, beating down Chad Gable, not much other than like one ankle lock hope spot from Gable. And then the second phase was more competitive, near falls. Talk about being in the building for that and the ebb and flow of the match and if they had the crowd the whole way or they had to earn them as they went.
No, they had the crowd the entire way. You know, the crowd was heavily going for Gable to be able to last the 5 minutes, and then he did. And I think we all thought he was going to pass out when he had him in the million-dollar dream-looking thing. And but, no, and then it was kind of awkward that the match just all of a sudden continued because, like, felt like obviously we don't get the benefit of commentary. Maybe there's some context to it. But it just kind of felt like Gunther said, this match isn't over. We're going to continue. And then it continued, and like why does he get that power to make the match continue? You said that you're going to spend the last 5 minutes. He lasted the 5 minutes. So now why do you get your win back or, you know, what have you? I feel like that should have been a storyline that should have carried over after SummerSlam, provided Gunther, you know, beats Drew. But whatever, it worked. It was still a great match. The crowd was into it virtually the entire time. You know, there were some hope spots that looked like Gable might upset him. And so those were good. And, you know, Gable's so freaking good in the ring that, you know, he can keep your attention very easily. He's very entertaining. You know, he's definitely that, you know, Diet Kurt Angle.
You mentioned Becky kind of entertained the crowd during the break. Any other off-air observations before the show, during commercial breaks, after the show that you want to share with us?
WWE is amazing at pushing WWE. So every break, they are selling you something. Hey, we got this new T-shirt. You know, they even showed the trailer to that Undertaker New Day movie that's on Netflix. It's been on Netflix since, like, 2020. They pushed that. Whatever they're selling, they're pushing it. They let us know that they were coming back to Houston in December for a show, and that since we're in the building, we get the special pre-sale code, and we can get our tickets tonight. So that was cool. They did the DX Suck It Cam. They did a You Can't See Me John Cena Cam. They did a dance cam. Sami Zayn actually entertained us a little bit as well. He was dancing to the SummerSlam theme song while we were waiting. Becky did her thing. That was about it. But yeah, it was a lot of hey, buy this. Hey, don't forget to watch Cody Rhodes on Peacock. Hey, don't forget Undertaker's still on Netflix. Hey, don't forget this. Hey, we got tickets, so buy them after the show. So, you know, they're masters at promoting. That's what they did.
Talk about Trish Stratus and how effective she was on the microphone. Cause I've become a fan of her mic work. I thought as a baby face, it just wasn't working. And as a heel, I think
amazing.
She's fun out there. It's kind of like Dominic. Yeah.
She is amazing. Oh, my God. She got nuclear heat when she dropped the Astros line because that's something that's near and dear to us Astros fans. when you talk about you don't cheat like the Astros, we take – in Houston, it feels like those championships
have
been few and far in
between.
Can you
hear me, Nate?
And
I can hear you. I can hear you.
For people to go to that, we take that one real personally. That got her nuclear heat. And yeah, you're right. She's absolutely enjoying it. She's doing the best mic work of her career probably at this age. And I thought that her and Becky were going to fight at SummerSlam, but I guess they're waiting to Canada. So it's kind of weird. I was like, so we're going to get this match tonight. And that was a little weird, but I mean, I'm never going to complain about seeing Trish Stratus.
Nate, what have you thought of Trish, by the way?
So growing up in the Attitude Era, I'm a huge fan of Trish Stratus. I mean, in everything she's done for the business and everything. But since turning heel, I think can you hear us? I don't know if you can hear us. We lost you for a little bit, but yeah, okay. She's I think this is like some of the best work she's done, like potentially in her career. The heel work has been great. I thought her work on the mic tonight was fantastic. I mean, I remember back to, you know, I mean, 20 years ago, you know, on the mic, she wasn't bad, but she was never like, you know, or anything like that on the mic. Overall, since turning heel, she's been really effective. I love the fact that she's brought back the nose. I mean, even though I believe it's a real broken nose, but the the nose mask. I remember she was in an angle wearing that same type of a, you know, nose mask years and years ago. So I thought that was kind of that was fun, just kind of a bit of a throwback for people that remember it. But yeah, like I said, overall, she's been killing it as a heel.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed. I mean, she's just so snide and like I said, just I think having fun in this role.
Yeah.
That she's been in. She's embracing it, and you know, no one ever accused her of being the Rock, that's for sure. And I don't think anyone still will. But I just feel like everybody is inspiring everybody else right now to be better. You know, there's just a sense of things are going well, and it seems like everybody's kind of having fun. Performing, and you know, the joy of performance is such a big thing when it comes to enjoying professional wrestling. Is everybody like enjoying their job and really seeming into just enjoying what they're doing? Because you don't want to watch a pastime and you think people are resenting their job or not having fun. So even the heels look like they're having fun doing what they're doing, even if it, you know, you do are inspired to see them lose, even in the process. So we were having a little phone connection with Jarvis, and he did drop off. So if maybe Jarvis will call back, although I think we kind of got most of what we were looking for information-wise from him. So we appreciate Jarvis. You can be an on-site correspondent, by the way, on this show, just like Jarvis was. Email me ahead of time if you can, WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com, and put the name of the city in the subject line and the date. That helps us stay organized a little bit. And we'll be in touch with you and set things up. All right, up next, we're going to go to area code 440. Thanks for calling. Go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Wade, this is Chris. I was actually at the show
440.
In Houston. So.
Yeah.
Hello? Yeah, this is Chris
awesome.
In Houston. I just left this show, too.
Yeah, can you hear us?
Yeah. First time I get to call in because I'm normally asleep at this time because I work early in the
awesome.
Morning, but I figured I'd give a call. Yeah, it was a great show tonight, but I wanted to call in because I had a question and then kind of an observation I made. So it was interesting at the show because I've gone to wrestling for the last decade live, been to every WrestleMania, and it was interesting to me on that Cody was so over, and he seems to be very much so. And I was thinking to myself as I was there, would the storyline have Brock be even better if he had won the title at WrestleMania, like as developing him as this lead babyface, you know, because the video package tonight was great, but I just couldn't help think of like, but there's still no title, and I don't know if that's going to hurt him later when he eventually does capture it. So if you guys wanted to comment on that.
Yeah, well, I don't think they were going to lose either way. I think Roman, he lost the title, didn't get to the 1,000-day celebration, dwelled on it. It led to a downward spiral emotionally. It made him more irritable and less likable or maybe sympathetic but not handling it well, so fans aren't cheering. Like, there was a story they could have told if he lost the title. And then Cody, triumphant champion. I addressed this in a Keller's Take editorial. You can find it at pwtorch.com in the opinion section if you just scroll down. It was a few weeks back. But I kind of talked about the pros and cons of it. And I think one of the key factors that you can't not address is if Cody won the title and he's a Raw wrestler, then you need to keep him on SmackDown instead, because it's or Cody brings a title to Raw, and then you need to come up with a new title for SmackDown. And I don't know that you can isolate that from the equation. And I kind of thought it through and wrote about it in that Keller's Take editorial, again, at pwtorch.com. So anybody listening, if they want to kind of see how I played that out, my ultimate verdict is I think it worked out well the way they went. It might have worked out better if they went the other way, but I think, as I said, there were some logistical issues that might have swayed them. But, my gosh, I mean, what's gone on with the Bloodline and having Jey Uso getting a title shot against Reigns with this historically significant and notable long uninterrupted title reign is so good. And I think Cody's in such a great spot when it comes to crowd reactions. And I don't think people have given up on that moment down the line when he wins the title. And now they have, if they want, this amazing storyline for next year's WrestleMania. And I just don't think they're in a bad position. But I'm not going to sit here and say it would have been a mistake to go the other way, in the sense that that had they, things would be worse. Like, maybe Cody would be even bigger and better and more popular, but it is kind of hard to imagine because things are going so well with him and things are going so well with Roman. I think they made the right choice. But had they made the other choice, I do not think it would have been a disaster. They just would have had to augment things. I don't know that people were ready for Brock to be a challenger for the world title, but I think people are ready for Brock to be a guy just being nasty and beating up Cody. It'd still be nice to get an explanation why, but we've moved past that, and then we just have to sort of accept it. Nate, how about you? What do you think about that ongoing question? Because you talked earlier about how you were bummed out. You know, you were expecting Cody would win, and we're kind of rooting for that to happen.
Yeah, I was. You know, I was solidly behind Cody, and I remember talking with Bruce and Kelly on PWT.com NXT, just, you know, off air about, you know, about WrestleMania, whatever. And, you know, they're both thinking I'm nuts. And I'm like, no, the way they're building this, it's got to be. And they're like, that's exactly why it's not. But I think the way that things wound up playing out is probably the best way that it could have gone. I mean, like, you know, like you're just saying, Wade, everything with the bloodline, that whole storyline, everything with Jey Uso, Sami Zayn, hitting the 1,000-day mark, all of that was, I mean, just great TV, very significant, especially that 1,000-day reign. It really is, it kind of cements Roman Reigns as one of the greatest, you know, potentially greatest of all times, you know, arguably anyway. So it kind of puts him in that conversation of where he may not have been before. You know, I think he may still would have been with, you know, the run he's had, but they love milestones. So hitting that 1,000-day milestone was really big. And another thing that, you know, that you just said, Wade, you know, you're not sure if a lot of people are necessarily ready to see Brock Lesnar in contention for the world title. And I'm definitely not. You know, we saw Brock Lesnar basically do exactly what Roman Reigns is doing to the title for quite some time. You know, Brock Lesnar would just disappear for months and months without, you know, so we wouldn't have a top title. And I think there was even a time where it was even before the Universal title, if I'm not mistaken, where Brock just like disappeared for a couple months and we just didn't have a world title. So I'm, you know, still kind of feeling the effects of that even years later. So just to see Brock in there, Brock being that special attraction, and against Cody, who is also arguably a special attraction, I think that in and of itself is enough. I think if, at least for me anyway, just kind of thinking about it with, you know, if Cody was a champion and adding in Brock Lesnar as the title, I think for me, the match would almost feel less than, because I would think, oh, yeah, of course, they're putting Brock Lesnar in another title match. Why wouldn't they? So I think the way things kind of played out is probably the best way it could have gone. You know, obviously, we'll never know, but I certainly love the way that the bloodline storyline is played out and everything else. So, yeah.
Chris, your thoughts on what we had to say? Anything you want to add?
No. I mean, it's great to get perspective on it. For me personally, I think the Bloodline storyline has been so strong, but I, as they keep drawing it out, I just couldn't help but sit at WrestleMania and be like, well, when is this going to happen? You know, is this going to go to 40? Is it going to go? And I mean, it's a great storyline. It's just being in the stadium and you work. They did a great job of working it up, and you know, you leave kind of disappointed. But hey, I mean, it leaves you watching for more. The other question I kind of had for you guys was, as like Jarvis had mentioned, they were like turning people away at the box office, and WWE is doing great right now. And the way like that cable and live TV are going, do you think it's possible that Raw could end up, you know, like on NBC, because, or do you think they'll just stay on USA whenever their new rights are up?
That's a heck of a question. I mean, SmackDown's doing top demo numbers on Friday nights among all shows. Monday night's tough. And during football season, it gets tougher. There's more competition. Networks put more stuff out there. But with a writer's strike, actor strike, you know, sports is valuable, but pro wrestling is, you know, becomes more valuable, especially because it's 52 weeks a year, reliably year after year. I wouldn't rule it out. I mean, I mean, who knows what the networks are going to be thinking when they see it. It's not just the TV ratings are paying attention to, and we chronicle it at pwtorch.com. We've got our rating section, and we do reports and add details nobody else has in terms of like 3-day and 7-day viewership. And I pull out the spreadsheets and I try to put numbers in perspective compared to prior years. And right now they're just beating year ago numbers. And I think networks notice that, of course. I don't know what they think. Of course they do. But I think they also know they're trending on social media. They're like a part of Americana in a way they haven't been before. And attendance, like you experienced tonight, people are buying money. They're selling out these buildings. And it just creates this whole – and they're enthusiastic. The crowds aren't quiet. So, I mean, WWE's value right now to a broadcast network like NBC is really high. I don't know how they would feel about giving away a primetime evening to Raw, but, you know, 8 years ago, 12 years ago, they of course the answer is no. But the way network television is going compared to streaming, I would rule it out, and I don't know that it would be a bad move. And it certainly would help WWE gain even more viewers, as we see with SmackDown. Maybe they'd reduce Raw to 2 hours, and that would be great also. Chris, tell us a little bit more about your experience in the building. We talked a lot to Jarvis, so if you heard that whole call, is there anything you want to add, or did you experience anything differently, or anything jump out that you want to bring up just for being able to be in the building tonight?
So one thing that they did differently this time is with pre-sale, like they've always done a pre-sale, but like I sat like row 6, and I only paid $50. But they only open up the bottom section for pre-sale. So then when they opened up the upper deck, like the third section, those tickets were also $50. So that was something that was different than what they normally do, because normally it's like the bottom you pay, you know, face money for to sit close. So I thought that was an interesting tactic that they kind of used to, because I've been to the Toyota Center before and they only have the bottom bowl filled up. And this was, like Jarvis said, it was like pretty close. I mean, the only time I ever saw it filled that much was that first show back from COVID. So it was pretty cool to kind of see, and I wonder if that was just a new strategy that they rolled out. But that was a big observation I made kind of as tickets went on sale.
That's interesting. There's so many more sophisticated strategies now with ticket sales, and some people have, you know, are starting to figure out. We talked about this on the Fix mailbag a couple months back. People are starting to catch on that the top price you pay is early, and if you wait, you can get a discount and a good seat. But now that strategy could backfire because you could end up having to pay resale markups when the show was sold out. They are getting more sophisticated about how to eke the most revenue out of shows, charge the people who are most eager to go the most money for the prime seats, and then, you know, later on when they open up other seats, you can get a pretty good deal on them. It's an art. It's an art form, and they're figuring out how to maximize everything. Was there anything that happened after Raw went off the air? We didn't have Jarvis on long enough to ask him that. Did the show end with a TV main event?
So they finished the main event, and then Seth and Sammy talked to the audience, and it was pretty much Seth was like, hey, can you guys sing Sammy's song? Because we're in Texas, and you guys should know, you know, how the song goes. And then Sammy got the mic and said, well, we all want to end the night singing Seth's song. So it was – there was no match after any. They did do the main event taping beforehand, but they didn't do any matches afterwards.
Gotcha. And did it seem like the crowd ever lost energy, or maybe the Ciampa match? It was just maybe a deep breath. But like, was there any kind of down part of the show where you felt like they lost the crowd or the crowd wasn't into it?
So I do agree with the Ciampa match, but I would say the lull for the crowd, like the Gable-Gunther match was, like, people got into that probably more than they expected to, and then they kind of went to the Ronda-Shayna video package, and that second video package of Ronda and Shayna, the crowd was, like, starting to be like, can they just end it already? So I thought that was an interesting take from the fans that they, like, they were okay with the first video package, but the second one, they were like, well, we're not seeing them. So they kind of soured a little bit on, well, neither lady is here, and we don't want to see another video package. And Ronda and Shayna, like, they went for the emotional part where they were both crying, and people just started making fun of it more than actually getting into the emotion behind it.
Interesting. Nate, is there anything else you want to ask about tonight's show from Chris, since we have a second correspondent here talking to us?
I was going to ask about it. I was actually going to ask about the if there was any sort of dark main event, but that was the only other question I could think of, honestly.
Was there anything before Raw went on the air? Any matches?
Yeah, they did a main event taping. It was Dana Brooke versus Xia Li, and Dana Brooke went over, and Apollo versus Bronson Reed. And surprisingly, like, I mean, they usually get good pops and main event because they're the first ones coming out. But people were really into Bronson Reed. So that was really a good sign for him because, yeah, people were like, when Apollo came out, they were excited. But when Bronson came out, people were like, oh, like, Apollo's going to get it because Bronson's coming out. So he got a pretty big heel pop for, like, he was kind of the first major heel that came out. So it was pretty cool to kind of get that. But it was a good sign for him. And I thought, too, people really got into the Riddle-Ludwig match more than I think they thought. It was kind of slow at first. But it picked up. They got a couple "This is awesome" chants going in the crowd during that one. So it was pretty cool for Kaiser to get. You know, people were interested in it.
So actually, I do have a bit of a question. So one of the and I just completely forgot what my question was. I'm sorry. Never mind.
And the way the brain works, you're going to think about it once the pressure's on.
Yep, as soon as it's off, I'll think about it. Wow.
Chris, is there anything else that stood out from tonight's show? Again, listening to Jarvis, that you experienced differently, or you want to emphasize or underline while Nate gathers his thoughts?
I will say it was really cool on that they had, like, they decided to bring Raquel out tonight. The audience was, I mean, we're pretty big in Texas. But mommy shirts were number one wears, but the Latino World Order shirts were pretty much everywhere. And then when Raquel came out, she got a really good pop, and people seemed really invested in that storyline with her and Rhea, more so than I thought they would be. So that was a good takeaway.
Yeah, yeah. Nate, how's your
I remember.
Go ahead.
Okay, so you said one of the main event matches, Dana Brooke was in the match. Dana Brooke's been spending some time down at NXT, and she's been mentoring an up-and-comer, a fellow gymnast, Kalani Jordan. Did Dana Brooke come out on her own, or did she have somebody with her when she made her entrance tonight, just out of curiosity?
Dana Brooke just came out on her own, and she was wearing the Barbie pink too. So I don't know if that. I mean, I guess she always does somewhat, but that seems to be something they're really pushing. And during the show, they put like 6 advertisements for Tiffany Stratton. Like they were like the blonde, you know, whatever. So that was interesting. And by the 6th one, the crowd was like, "Okay, we got it." So they beat that one in pretty good.
That's great. That's great. Chris, I appreciate you calling. Any other closing thoughts?
No, I just want to thank you guys for everything that you do, and I really enjoyed calling. Hopefully I'll get to do it again sometime.
That'd be great. Call anytime, and glad you called up and decided to call tonight.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
Yep, you bet. All right, so let's hit a couple emails here. First of all, Sergio emailed and said, during Raw, when Rhea grabbed the mic, she got a big pop and mommy chants. Obviously, the crowd loves her, and it's going to become more challenging to keep her heel. Contrast that to Dom, who has that great mega heat every time he touches a microphone. Do you guys think that when they eventually split up, this act, Dom and Rhea, can actually feud with each other, maybe even have a match? Dom's a weaselly heel who hides behind Rhea, so I don't think his credibility would be hurt if he had to sell for her sometime down the line. I could just imagine the pop Rhea would get if one day down the line, Dom crosses a line and she takes it out on him with a rip tied. P.S. Ricochet said Homeboy in his promo again tonight, and I know Wade asked a few weeks ago if anyone still uses that. I can confirm, as a 32-year-old man from Connecticut, I still use Homeboy semi-regularly. So there we are. I asked genuinely. I just didn't know if Ricochet was dating himself, you know, as a guy who used to be cool, and now he's not, using a term that, you know, he used 15 years ago that no one says anymore. I've had enough people say they still say Homeboy, so I give Ricochet a pass, and I just don't know any better. But now I do. As for Rhea and Dom, I mean, yeah, when that moment comes, and the crowd obviously is willing to love Rhea Ripley, they're working hard to get her heel heat right now. I think it's working, but there's this undercurrent of we're ready to cheer her as the number one female babyface in this company. I don't know if she'll be number one babyface overall, but I think she can be really popular and, you know, top 5, 6 popular on the whole roster. Nate, you've watched her journey. You've watched the chemistry with her and Dominic. What do you think about them eventually breaking up? I don't think they should rush it, but that is absolutely a card they can play anytime.
Oh, 100%. I think that they should leave the two of them kind of together for as long as it is as hot as it is. You know, if it starts to kind of die out or, you know, seem a little bit stale, sure. But man, right now, I mean, they're absolutely on fire. I mean, down in NXT, it's an absolute treat to see them down in NXT. The amount of heat that Dom brings is just absolutely incredible, especially, you know, winning the North American title. This is a title that, you know, Wesley, Carmelo Hayes, they spent so much time building up to mean something, and now we have this, you know, Weasley heel, Braddy heel, as one, I think it was Sergio, actually, said Braddy heel, and I like that descriptor. I'm going to steal that descriptor for PWT Talks NXT. You know, so it's been fantastic. I think if they do decide to pull that card and, you know, split the two of them and actually even have them feud a little bit, you've got to be a little bit careful with intergender matches and things like that. But if there's anybody in WWE where I think they could pull off an intergender match with, it would probably be Rhea Ripley. I mean, she's bigger than some of the guys on the roster. You know, she's absolutely intimidating. She hangs with the guys quite a bit. She's had some physical altercations in the past with men, if I'm not mistaken. I think she has. So it wouldn't be like out of the, you know, realm of possibility for her. But I think that would be like, if they were willing to do that, and I don't know, you know, if that's even logistically possible with sponsors and, you know, all of that stuff, you know, to actually do an intergender match in WWE. But if they were able to do it, I think that's just going to print money with how, based on how hot and how popular the Judgment Day act is, but especially Dom and Rhea. They blew up in a way that I don't think that WWE expected. The chemistry between all four of them, really, but between Dom and Rhea is unbelievable. You know, I know I've seen interviews where, you know, Dom's talking about how the four of them, they all travel together. You know, they spend as much time as possible together. They're becoming like a family. And that absolutely comes across on TV. You see how comfortable everybody is together. And it just makes everything seem much more authentic. And it's not like they just kind of threw four people together, right? You know, which it may have seemed, well, I guess sort of seemed that way at first, but now, I mean, it's actually like a brotherhood. I think they're doing a fantastic job with it. But yeah, once, if they do decide to go that route and break the two of them up, put them and pit them against one another, I'm grabbing some popcorn. I'm going to be sitting right there watching.
Yes, absolutely. I think they can. I'll answer the question. I think they can do an intergender match between those two. The match is not going to be brutal, like, you know, violent, where it will turn some people off. Of, you know, Dom is not going to be punching her in the face over and over again and blooding her. There, you can't do that on a mainstream show. You know, and you can go, why not? Well, it just, there's, that's just the way it is. That's just real. And I know there's people like, women and men should just all wrestle each other. And it's like, no, that's not realistic for a mainstream international company like this. But you can get away with a Dom Rhea match. And it won't be comedy, but it would be, you don't want to do a comedy match. There's been intergender comedy matches. Like, no one's taking anything seriously. But it wouldn't be that. But she absolutely could show him up in ways and outmaneuver him and take him down and roll him up and you know, hit some of the signature moves. And he can, you know, make comebacks against her. I mean, there's a way to tell that story and have it be thoroughly entertaining. But, you know, you need to plan it out and make sure that, you know, there are things for Dominic to do that would put Rhea in a sense of jeopardy without it seeming violent and off-putting. Okay, so up next, let's see. We'll go to JB in Detroit. Was it productive to call his moment with Ricochet during the Royal Rumble a double jump spot that went viral? I know he's playing the heel and all, but I'm not sure that you want an event and match as important as the Royal Rumble in the WWE ecosystem being possibly viewed as a spot fest. I didn't have a problem with it, but I'd have a problem with almost anyone but Logan Paul saying that. Logan Paul's character is he's obsessed with going viral. He is a social media creation, a star, and his self-worth, his fame is based on viral moments. Spot is an internal insider term, but it also is something somebody who has no idea what calling a spot in the ring means, they would go, oh, yeah, that spot in the match where they did a double jump and hit each other. Like, it's not, by definition, inherently an insider term that breaks the fourth wall for me. And so I'm fine with it. I mean, the Rumble's full of crazy spots. You know, Kofi's been doing it for years. You know, different wrestlers have things that they do that they're known for, and people are okay with that. Nate, what do you think of that line? Does it bother you? Would you augment it ideally, or do you think nothing needs to change?
I'm kind of with you. I think if it was pretty much anybody else, I might have an issue with it. I'm not a huge fan of consistently breaking the fourth wall in wrestling. I mean, I'd still like kayfabe to exist to some extent. So we can kind of suspend our disbelief and, you know, get engrossed in the product and all of that. It really didn't necessarily bother me for a lot of the reasons Joe outlined. I mean, his whole character, I mean, he's basically playing himself dialed up to, you know, 11, which is, as people have said many times, it's the best character to play. And that's really what he's doing. So he's kind of just taking his whole, you know, YouTuber personality and that's, I mean, I feel like that's something he would have said, you know, on a podcast or, you know, in an interview or something like that. But, you know, if it was like, Matt Riddle or something, I don't know why I picked Matt Riddle's first name that came to mind, that said something about, you know, a viral spot fest, I'd probably be like, that didn't necessarily fit the character. For a lot of those reasons, it really didn't bother me.
All right, number two, how far has Matt Riddle fallen down the card now that he's being sacrificed to get over Gunther's hype man, who hasn't done much winning at all since he's been on the main roster? Also, Riddle's kangaroo should have been Armadillo's. We're in Houston. Riddle has been, you've followed his journey from NXT. Obviously, he struck gold with Randy Orton, with RK-Bro. Then he had to take some time off. And since he got back, I think they're sort of more timid about getting fully behind him. But, you know, this was a storyline-based match. It wasn't a squash. You know, the story was, you know, Kaiser had to redeem himself in the eyes of Gunther. I love Corey Graves going, yeah, because Kevin Patrick said, you know, Gunther not being disappointed in Kaiser is like a parent-son relationship, and, you know, you don't want to let your parents down, and you'll do anything to earn their respect back. And then Corey Graves is like, I don't have my parents' respect, and I'm famous. Like, being famous alone should get you respect from your parents. So I thought that was, you know, I don't know if it was self-deprecating or just sort of sad or what with Corey Graves. But they were playing that up, and it was a storyline. And, Riddle is not on a winning streak, but I don't think that is that big of a deal because Kaiser's good. And I just think it is where Riddle is. Now, I don't think they're using Riddle poorly. Obviously, they could use him. They could push him more. But I'm not looking at this going, geez, what a shame. Because he had a competitive match for 11 minutes, and he happened to lose. And I'm fine with heels beating baby faces. And I think they can heat Riddle up again when it's time. But right now it's kind of weird, but it's more Ricochet's time than Riddle's time. Nate, how do you feel about the ebb and flow of Riddle's push? And how do you think the main roster has taken advantage of him compared to his potential when he was in NXT?
Yeah, so I mean, you know, he's definitely cooled off, you know, right now compared to some other, you know, other points in time he's been in the company of RK-Bro, especially, you know, probably due to him needing to take a little bit of time off, as you said, and then being a little bit, you know, timid to kind of get behind him right now. I feel like there's a lot of upside with Matt Riddle, and especially since Triple H has taken over creative, I feel like he's kind of used Riddle in a bit of a better way than Vince may have, like with, you know, even with RK-Bro what I mean. He's been able to kind of get a little bit more time in the spotlight, I guess. Like you said, tonight, this was a storyline match. You know, I mean, Matt Riddle came out, made the save for Drew McIntyre last week. And, you know, so this was kind of a little bit of a grudge match for that. And the story, like you said, was Kaiser needed to win Gunther back over after losing, you know, and prove himself. So, I mean, it certainly made sense. And I feel like this is probably, you know, just kind of another notch in the story that, you know, they're trying to tell. So, you know, yeah, fine. He, you know, he took a loss, but like you said, it was still a competitive match. I don't think it was, you know, anything that, I don't think a lot of people are going to remember that he lost come next week, quite frankly. So, you know, I don't think it's going to hurt him too much.
I have liked, setting aside the Riddle aspect, I have liked the Gunther being hard on his guys and Kaiser being so proud later in the show, like, I'm back in good graces with Gunther. It's just, it's interesting. You know, they're doing, they've gone beyond the initial note they hit, which is Gunther being mean when they, you know, disappointed when they lose and being hard on them. And now it's turned into like this kind of multidimensional relationship between them with again, an ebb and flow. They're on a journey and we're following along. So, I like it. I think Kaiser and Giovanni Vinci deserve to be protected a little more than they have been. I think they're really good. And Gunther's good. And I think that Imperium should be protected more as a full-fledged faction, just as Judgment Day and Bloodline are. So that's good there. All right. Number three from JB. Was the Maxxine Dupri Valhalla match something they should have featured on Raw? I like the exuberance of Maxxine's character as much as the next guy, but I'm not sure she's ready to be in a highlighted singles match without a bit more seasoning. The match reminded me of something that should have been on NXT or AEW Dark. So I covered that earlier. I know it was kind of jumping ahead a little bit, Nate, but her gimmick is she's not good, and anything she does that isn't a disaster is a huge achievement. That's her character. So, yes, under all – it's sort of like, you know, a mixed gender match with Dom and Rhea or Logan Paul talking about being viral. Like sometimes there's an exception to a rule. And I think the exception to the rule for Maxxine works. She's not wrestling in a way that belongs on national TV in front of millions of people, except for her character and the story they're telling. What do you think?
Yeah, no, 100%. If this was anybody else, if we were talking about any other, you know, wrestler in this particular spot, male or female, and their gimmick wasn't that they were learning how to wrestle, it wouldn't work. You put them back down in NXT. Like, it was actually something that I was thinking myself during the match was, like, I feel like this is something that I'd be watching on Tuesday night in NXT, you know, probably right before the mid-show main event or, you know, something like that. I think it certainly works. You know, one of the angles right now that's been going on down in NXT, you know, Thea Hale and Tiffany Stratton, and Thea Hale is almost kind of in a similar vein right now to Maxxine, not quite. So I think Thea Hale is much better in the ring than Maxxine, but it's kind of a similar story. You know, you've got Thea Hale; she's learning from Andre Chase, Duke Hudson, as well as Drew Gulak and Charlie Dempsey, but they're now out of the faction. But whatever. But she's been learning. She's figured out how to like lock in this Kimura lock, and she actually like got a match for the NXT title against Tiffany Stratton yesterday at the Great American Bash. Like I said, very similar. You're able to get behind Thea Hale. Thea Hale's probably my favorite thing on NXT right now. And so you're able to get behind her simply because everything that she does, any little win that she gets, is like you're able to celebrate with her. I mean, plus, she's got amazing energy anyway. So I kind of feel like there's a lot of parallels between Thea Hale and Maxxine. I know JB is, you know, JB emails into our show all the time, so I'm sure, you know, JB can see some of those comparisons too and those parallels. I think, you know, for what they're presenting Maxxine right now, it works. You know, she's not all that great between the ropes, but she's not supposed to be.
Absolutely. Okay. Next question here. Who is more likely to cash in the briefcase at SummerSlam, Damian Priest or Io Sky? What do you think?
Ooh, that's a good one. I'm thinking probably more Io Sky. If Damian Priest cashes in, like, so there's a couple of ways they, like, I'm kind of thinking about it, because if Seth Rollins, you know, winds up retaining, then you have Damian Priest cash in and then potentially beat Seth Rollins, bring, and still the WWE World Heavyweight Championship at least comes home to the Judgment Day. May not, you know, just around somebody else's waist or over somebody else's shoulder. So they could certainly go that way. Or Damian Priest turns on Finn Balor, which I'm not a huge proponent of right now because I really like what the Judgment Day are doing. I don't want to see that necessarily get sullied yet with a breakup, but at the same time, the best time to break up a group, I guess, is when they are hot. So there is that. So there's a possibility there. But yeah, I mean, actually, so I guess I'm going to change my answer. I'm thinking maybe Damian Priest. I've talked myself back over into Damian Priest. Because the more I talk about it, the more I think that no matter what happens, whether it's Seth Rollins that takes the win or Finn Balor takes the win, there's still that potential for Damian Priest to cash in.
Yeah, yeah. I don't have a strong pick either way. I think there's good storyline reasons for both.
Yeah.
I'm thinking Sky's more likely, but there's like this opportunity with the Bloodline and Dominic, you know, the NXT North American Champion. We talked earlier about Rhea Ripley being hot. We got Finn Balor, and there's just this great storyline going on where it would be a, you know, really good chance. It seems like if Priest wins, but not at the expense of Finn, but because of Finn, coming up short but weakening Seth, you do put Priest in a position to win the title, and then there's tension there. That Priest has a title, but Finn softened him up, and that can be a good hook going into the fall. But you have to decide that you don't have something better for Seth instead. If Priest wins, it is the answer to a question that a lot of people are asking. It would take some reshuffling of how do you get LA Knight into a world title match? He's not going to take on Roman Reigns. I shouldn't say that. I would have said that like 2 weeks ago. I'm not willing to completely rule it out because, I mean, why not strike while it's hot? And it would be nice to give Roman a fresh opponent. I think they've got things planned out for Roman, but I will stop short of ruling it out. But LA Knight going after Damian Priest, I could see that. And yeah. WWE might decide that is our path to get LA Knight in a main event, and Seth's going to be fine. So I don't know. Yeah, anything you want to add to that, Nate?
No, I mean, I think that's like, I think that's actually like a great way to finally get, you know, LA Knight into the main event. It's like, watching LA Knight down in NXT. I mean, I remember saying to myself, I kept calling him the Rock Light, you know, and I mean, everybody makes a lot of comparisons between him and the Rock. I mean, hell, that they sound almost exactly the same. But he's so much more than what they've been able, what they've been doing with him for the past handful of years, especially the Max Dupree stuff, you know, when he originally debuted on the main roster, but now he's just organically taken off. I mean, the reactions for him are incredible. There are not many people that can actually get on the mic and talk the way that he talks. You know, you get a lot of people that have that, you know, the same cadence that Brock Lesnar did tonight, and they get the what chance and things like that. Obviously Brock, I think, did that on purpose, but still, you know, where LA Knight, he gets out there, he cuts this amazing promo with, you know, just incredible conviction. And the people just love it. And not only that, he's incredibly charismatic in the ring as well. So it certainly makes sense that people want to see him in the main event. So something along those lines where, you know, Seth Rollins, like you said, I think he'd be totally fine if he lost the World Heavyweight Championship. You know, he's one of the most popular characters in the company right now. So I don't think, you know, that would really change just because he's not the World Heavyweight Champion. Would you put it around Damian Priest's waist after a cash in? Sure. LA Knight, Damian Priest, like, sign me up. I'm all for that. I'm all for it.
Excellent. Nate, anything else in your notes? I think we can wrap up there. We certainly covered a lot of territory here.
Let's see. I do have I don't think there's really anything we haven't talked about. I think we hit everything.
Yeah. Well, great.
Everything I've got anyway.
Well, it's been a lot of fun doing a show with you again. It's been too long. Hopefully we can do it again very soon.
Indeed.
Everyone,
thanks for having me.
Yeah. Check out Nate on the PWT Talks NXT show. It's part of the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup. Just great group of hosts and co-hosts, each with a niche topic every day of the week. Check it out. Search PW Torch on your podcast app. It is free. You can upgrade to a VIP membership and get versions of the shows with the ads and plugs removed as on part on our VIP feed. PWTorch.com/goVIP to upgrade to VIP. But if not that, certainly you're encouraged to search PW Torch and check out their show. You can also find a link to their live stream. They do a live post show on Tuesday nights at PWTorch.com in the TV report covering NXT. You'll find the link to live stream the show just like we do here on Monday nights after Raw. Nate, thanks again. We will talk to you soon.
Thank you very much.
You bet. And thanks, everybody else, for joining us.